I want to be like Mike. J. Mark, you dated us when you brought that up. You can do better than to want to be like Tim, let me assure you. It's Mother's Day, and since I rarely get invited to these parties, I think the last one was at Mary Ann's, the ladies' parties. Today, I'd like to just talk to the mothers, if I may. This is kind of a captive audience. And as we think of, we're studying in the new members class about different gifts and what God has put into the church, there's this, what's the word I want? Position, function in the church, in the family called mothers. And so we all are in a situation where God calls us to a unique place for all of us. And for some, he's called them to be mothers. I'm going to start in Proverbs 31. Typically, if you want to turn to it, you may. Proverbs 31, where it talks about, often used in a wedding sermon. But there are some things here that I found very interesting when I was thinking about mothers. And let me say this before I forget it. I want to read this to you if I can. If I may, one of the things that I really started thinking about in regard to our Compass meeting coming up, point number 8 on our core values for the church says this, talks about marriage as being a lifetime covenant, cultivating strong marriages, and it says this, cultivating stable Christian homes in the congregation where children are nurtured in Christian faith, from generation to generation. That word nurtured made me think of motherhood. I neglected to get Jenny a title, but yesterday as I was studying, I decided to call this Rubies. Are any Rubies in here? Is there a Ruby? Okay. Elmer is definitely had his Wheaties this morning. There are many Rubies in here, maybe not by the name, but just for what it's worth, I have a couple goals here. Today I would like to, two things, the most obvious one, probably some of you have Mother's Day functions, so I was warned, don't make it late. And secondly, I really would like to just encourage you as mothers, whether you're in the weeds with little children and changing diapers, or whether you've got grandchildren and you're looking back at your own motherhood, I just want to, if I may, in a godly way, just kind of lift you on a pedestal for all the work and things that you do. And just be an encouragement for really the calling, the special calling that God has given you. In Proverbs 31:10, and most of my scriptures today I'm going to take out of the NIV, says, a wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. I was curious, never done this, about rubies. So some of my sermon today is interesting statistics about, for example, rubies, and some about mothers. A few of this I researched. Some of this I researched. Some of it I just did some calculations on my own. And I just want to really crystallize what a mother truly does, okay? So first of all, they're of great value. By today's standards, a carat is about 2/10 of a gram, okay? So gemstones are typically weighed or they're sold by the carat, okay? So right now, a ruby, by the way, is a member of the corundum family of gemstones, for those of you that like science in school. For whatever that means, I don't even know what branch of science that would be. But they're typically red. Right now, they value at between $100 to about $15,000. You know, that's the high and the low per carat, okay? So remember, I did a little math here, and 1 ounce you know, it doesn't weigh much, but suppose you had one that for us that I don't think in carats or even grams, I think in ounces or pounds. So if you had a carat or a ruby that was 1 ounce in weight, at today's value at $100 a carat, that's low value, it'd be worth about $14,000, okay? On the high side, at $15,000 a carat, it would be worth about $2.1 million, okay? Now, the interesting thing that when I think of gemstones, I typically think, you know, the writer here said she is worth far more than rubies. When I think of gemstones, I'm typically thinking diamonds, okay? Well, I think there's a reason he said that, and I'll just read this. Rubies are often called the king of gems in some ancient cultures. Rubies were considered the rarest and most precious gemstones in the world. The price of a gem-quality ruby will far exceed the price of a diamond of the same size. Now, to put this in perspective, I was curious, well, what's the biggest ruby that there ever was? There's one found, it's evidently East Indian, I can't pronounce the first part of it, that is considered the largest double-star ruby in the world, according to Guinness Book of World Records. A double-star, when you polish the stone sometimes, and I had a picture of it, it would put like a 12-pointed star in the middle. It's just a kind of a pattern that naturally occurs with the minerals in the stone. Well, a double star appears on both sides of the stone. So this particular stone weighed 1,370 carats, or 274 grams. It's, according to this source, is currently owned by an East Indian lawyer whose family had it and thought it had a curse. And so it was covered with dust, and they never did. Finally, in 1988, he unveiled it, polished it up, and because it's a double star ruby, the largest that is known at this point, so I'm going to take a guess at what it's valued. One stone at about $100 million. So Jesus said that a mother is worth far more than rubies. So why is this so critical? Just as a bit of trivia, it's the first jewel in the first row of the high priest's breastplate, which you can find in Exodus 28:17. Now, before we go on through the Proverbs 31 here, I just want to pull out a few things out of the chapter there. Hasten to say this, if I were a mother and I read this list of ideals, this is not to say that every one of you has to meet these ideals. This is something that we work for, that as a faithful Christian mother, we should be willing to be molded and become more like this over a period of time. So don't get discouraged, is I guess what I'm saying. I had a mother, believe it or not, and she wasn't perfect. And I've got a great mother of my children, and she's real close, but not quite. Okay, so don't expect perfection. All right, just a few things, a few characteristics of mothers that I found interesting. Verse 15, and here again I'm reading out of the NIV. She gets up while it's still dark. She provides food for her family. So she is a provider of multitude of things. And recently I met this week I met a man who was a stay-at-home mom. And as I think about that, the sleep deprivation, let me tell you a story. And this tells you, I thought of this morning, when Sabrina was pretty small, I'm pretty sure she was the one to blame for this, at our house in Benton, she was sick, without warning, bleh, all over the hardwood floor. And me, like a good dad, said, well, I can do this, you know. And I'll never forget, Leanne was taking care of the twins or something, and I said, nah, I can do this. Down on my hands and knees, and all of a sudden I'm going, And I don't throw up easily. And so finally she said, let me take care of it. And I said, no problem. And she just, you see what I'm saying? There are things that ladies, mothers, the instinct in them, they just can do. Verse 17 says, so they're a provider. Verse 17 says, she sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. I had to chuckle at that verse for this reason. And obviously, I can preach the best out of my own life's experiences, but tremendous mother-in-law. She's not like a lot of people say an outlaw. Just because of experiences in life, and she and her sister would get together, and this best explains this verse, and they can just work and, you know, do other things. And my brother-in-law and I would occasionally kind of joke because Leanne and her sister maybe don't talk quite as much, but they're the same way. So we'd have this thing about the Stutzman mitt. You know, we kind of elbow each other and snicker a little bit. And really secretly, we were pretty pleased. They, you know, a mother, that's just the way it is. It seems they're tireless. They do a lot of things that, well, let me back up and say this. I'm a wimp when I get sick. I just freely admit it. I you know, far more than my wife. I just, you know, I get sick and I it seems I'm half, you know, during the winter especially. Here's just this week, she was, or last week, when was it? Within the last 2 weeks, she's feeling, and I thought about this then, she's feeling a little nauseous, but we're still going away. If that would have been me, I'd have been staying at home on the couch. So there's just a vitality there that sometimes we as men don't quite have. In verse 26, and I want to keep going here, she says, she speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. There's this wise and loving counsel that comes through the life's experiences of a mother, a godly mother. And then in verse 28, her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Real quickly, that word blessed, I was curious about that, is used of going in a straight way and therefore has the connotation of prosperity and successful living. She's blessed, all right? Praises has the idea, it's the root to the idea of radiance. Her husband praises her because there's and I know Val Yoder has a sermon in which he talks about having radiant wives and radiant mothers. There's a bond between a mother and a child that doesn't necessarily happen between a husband or between a father. And I'm not sure I really have a lot of scientific explanation for this. It's just something that I've seen, you know, when, especially in small children, it seems when they get hurt a lot of times in our family, you know, they run to mother. There's just that bond, and I think it comes from nurturing and holding the children close and just loving them in a way that me as a practical dad sometimes, they just get that from mom. And I was kind of, by the way, I was looking forward to this because the more I looked at the function of motherhood through the church, it's one story, and we'll get to part of that a little bit later. Something else in John 19, read this in John 19, verse 25 through 27. I'm not going to turn to it, but here's a situation where you read, let's turn to it. John 19. And let's set the stage for what is going on here. Verse 25 through 27. And I just really thought this was interesting. Very familiar story, recorded here in the book of John at the crucifixion. Here's Jesus, and he is ready to die to atone for the sins of the world. And right in the middle of that, he's concerned about the welfare of his mother. Don't you think that's significant? That he takes time. Tradition has it that his mother, Mary, was not well-to-do. She was poor. And here, at this request, he took care of her support. And because it was John who was someone she could turn to, and John, the beloved disciple, someone she could turn to in her time of grief because of his death. And then there's more that could be said about that. But as I looked at this whole thing of this, I guess what I want to leave with you as mothers is this is a sacred calling. It's a high calling, despite the fact that sometimes there are messy diapers and things that aren't quite so fun and sleepless nights. Well, let's put this into perspective. I did a little calculating. Looking at the amount of time that you spend with your children. So let's say from, and then there's a reason I want to do this. Let's say from year one or new birth until five, when a lot of children start go to kindergarten. And I averaged it out. It's been a while since we've had newborns, but you know, what are they supposed to sleep, 12 to 14 hours a day? So let's just say, for argument's sake, just to give you a relative standard to go by, that in the first 5 years, your children will sleep an average of 11 hours a night, okay? That's not factoring in the time that you get up and take care of them during the night for sickness. What I'm after is the amount of time that a mother will spend with her children, typically in our settings, a stay-at-home mom. In 5 years, that would be about 23,360 waking hours with the children, 23,000 hours. Sounds like a lot. It is. In contrast, men, if we work 9 hours a day, 45 hours a week, 250 working days in the year, in 5 years, we'll have spent only about 12,000 hours, waking hours, with our children. So in the first 5 years, who do you think really has almost double the impact with our young children? The interesting thing about that is, and I'm not sure why God designed it. Back up and say this. I don't think God designed it that way, but you know, the thought that came to me is during this same time period, because of our culture and the desire to make lots of money, oftentimes that's when an entrepreneur is working like mad to get his business built up. So that statistic for the men goes down even further as far as time spent. Now, why is that important? I'm sure a lot of us have heard that within the first 3 years is the optimal time for a child to be, what's the word I want, developed. Well, for all intents and purposes, I looked up some statistics or some facts about the human brain. And let me say this first. I'm going to read a few quotes here. It is certainly no accident that the affection most parents feel toward their babies and the kind of attention we most want to shower them with, touching, holding, comforting, rocking, and talking to, provide precisely the best kind of stimulation for their growing brains. So the instinct that God has put into us to hold our children is exactly what they happen to need. Recent research confirms that the first 5 years are particularly important for the development of a child's brain, and the first 3 years are the most critical in shaping the child's brain architecture. Here's another one. A child's social, emotional development, now think about this, depends on a positive, nurturing attachment to a primary caregiver, which for us as Christians is typically the primary caregiver in those early years is a mother. Now, I look at things like this, especially with the human body, and I think, how does God do that? He just has a flawless design. The human brain takes time to develop. So nature has ensured that the neural circuits responsible for the most vital bodily functions, now just at birth, breathing, heartbeat, circulation, sleeping, sucking, and swallowing, are up and running by the time a baby emerges from the protective womb. And here's what I want to get at for you as mothers. The rest of brain development can follow at a more leisurely pace, maximizing the opportunity for a baby's experience and environment to shape his emerging mind. All right, lots of reading there. Mr. Chris, if I err here on the science side, you'll have to correct me afterward. But I for sake of wanting to get this straight, I'm not going to get into a lot of the physiological part of it, except just to explain a little bit how a child's brain develops. And then I think you'll understand why I'm doing this. There are what are called neurons in the brain, mentioned just now. These are areas where neurons which communicate with one another using electrical and chemical signals. Now, this is what I want. These messages that go back and forth between the neurons are the physical basis for learning and memory. Okay? So you've got these neurons that are created, and there's another, okay. At birth, most of those are typically developed or in place. Now, by the time they get to age 3, you have about 80% of your adult volume of neurons that your brain still continues to develop. And there's a whole mess of things that goes with that. But here's what's interesting. The messages are passed between the neurons at correct connections called synapses. Okay? Kind of like the communicator between the neurons, which is where your learning takes place. Okay? Now, between conception, and this is really the why I want to tell you all of this, between conception and age 3, a child's brain undergoes an impressive amount of change. Okay? Synapses are formed at a faster rate during these years than at any other time. Basically, what happens is a lot of the neurons, the centers for learning, are there, but the communication between those explodes in the first 3 years. By the time you get to age 3, a lot of you've got way more than you need for adult life. Okay? At age 2 or 3, the brain has up to twice as many synapses as it will have in adulthood. And this is what's interesting. These surplus connections are gradually eliminated through childhood and adolescence, a process sometimes referred to as blooming and pruning. Okay, so let me explain this the best way I can understand it. Is in order for your brain to develop as a child, you've got this communication going on, but you've got way more of those connections than you really need. So what happens is as children and babies get stimulus through their senses, some of those are strengthened, those connections are strengthened, and some of them are weakened and eventually disappear, don't function. That's the best way I can describe it. In fact, I have a picture here of how that's supposed to look scientifically. So your genetics bears a role in that. That's basically the architecture or the blueprint of how a child's brain develops. But the environment in which they find themselves and the stimulus is really fine-tuning the construction, if that makes sense. All right. Leave all of that for me just to say this. As I was reading through that and seeing, is this really true? Do we understand how important and critical a mother's role is to the development of that child in the first 3 years? Because according to science, after about 3 or 4 years, you've established the basis for how that child will be. There are still lots of other influences, but brain development, by then you're starting to lose some of those connections. And guys like me, we lose a lot of them. This keeps going downhill. But you see what happens right there? There's just I can't put enough emphasis on the fact that you as mothers have, from newborn on, you've carried this baby, and now all of a sudden you've got this tremendous opportunity and are spending almost twice as much time as the dads to influence that child and help them develop. Well, what's the big deal? Why? Have you ever thought what your child's going to be like? Especially when you're tired and You're down in the middle of it. What's their character going to be like? Their social skills. What job are they going to have? What's the personality going to be like? Are they going to be giving, forgiving, secure, self-assured? Will they get married? In the church, how are they going to function? Could they be missionaries, preachers, teachers? And most of all, will they be prepared for life? And the reason I say that is, what I'm after here is when we realize the huge importance that motherhood has, the enormous privilege and calling that God has given us, I'm thinking down the road and saying, you know what? This goes all trickles all the way down into the church. Will they be prepared? So what's the world going to be like that they're going to go into? It's harsh, unforgiving, it's greedy, selfish, materialistic, bitter, revengeful. The Bible says they are haters of God. They will compromise. My children will, if they go into the world, will face children that come from broken homes that did not have the benefit of an upbringing like I did. Well, let's take a look at 1 Samuel real quickly. 1 Samuel, someone tell me what the story is here. Very, very familiar story. Shout it out. Who's the mother here? Hannah. 1 Samuel chapter 1. And as an encouragement to you as mothers, as you think about all of the work, I would like to just give you this perspective. You're not just doing it because when you get married, you're kind of, in our culture, you're expected to have children. You know, or you know, it's just, well, what about it? Well, then, okay, they move out of the house and Dad and I can go RVing or something like that. You know, there's just more to it than this. There's just way more to it. And I thought about Hannah, and I like what she did in verse 22 of 1 Samuel chapter 22. It says, Hannah did not go. I want to go to verse 11 first to get what her request was. And she made a vow saying, if you will only look upon your servant's misery, and not forget your servant, but give her a son. I skipped a little bit there. This is the phrase I want. Then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life. And I know we've all heard this before, but that's the ultimate reason. That's what can make all the hard work and the cleaning up cuts and changing of diapers and all the things that really make it worthwhile. We're giving these children to the Lord. And by the way, dads, don't think that you're getting away with this, because remember, you're there half the time. So when you're there, maybe you should, I shouldn't say that because then I have to do it too, but maybe we should give our wives a little bit of a break. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's what Hannah did. She's giving him all the days of his life, and that, as fathers, that should be our goal as well. Verse 22 says this. She told her husband that she did not want to go up when he was going up. Until after the boy is weaned, I will take him and present him before the Lord. Now, I always thought, well, typically nurse up to a year. Back in that culture, they would sometimes nurse up to age 3 because they didn't have a way of keeping the milk sweet. So now think about this. What Hannah was doing, she pleaded for this child, said, if you give him to me, I'll give him back to you. And then she's had him for 3 years, and I just put myself in these shoes as a dad, and all the good times, and by then they're starting to respond and all of that. And then she says, I'll give him back. He won't be in my house anymore. Verse 28, they're up. She has weaned him. He is weaned. Took him to the Eli the priest. And in verse 28 it says this. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord. The ESV and the King James translate that as lent, which is a Hebrew word that means to have loaned or borrowed. And I did dig into that further, maybe someone knows better, but I take that as almost being that God lent let's leave that. I want to think that through a little bit. But I found that part of it interesting, that now she's giving him back and using that word give or lent. Verse 2, verse 1, and this is really what I want to leave you with as far as Hannah is concerned. In chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "My heart rejoices in the Lord, and the Lord my horn is lifted high." What do you think she was rejoicing about? The fact that she just gave up her son? Or was it the fact that God had given her a son? What do you think? I don't think it was either one of those. She was rejoicing in a God who is small enough to come down and take part in our affairs. If that makes sense. The supreme source of Hannah's joy was not in the child, but in the God who has answered her prayer. It wasn't in the child. It was in God. That was what really created her joy. And if I think about whether you're in the middle of raising young children or you're looking backwards, you know, isn't that really where our joy is as mothers? Regardless of mistakes or mistakes to come or good things or good things to come, you know, the child is really not where our joy comes from, should come from anyway. That creates joy and happiness, and it's a gift from God. But the joy comes from comes from the mother having her faith in God. Susanna Wesley, I was remembering a story that I had heard years ago, so I looked a bit. She was the mother of, I want to read this for you. She was the mother of John and Charles Wesley, who had started the Methodist Church, and those of you that like church history. This is interesting. Susanna bore between 17 and 19 children. 10 survived, and the frequent absences of her husband on church business left the management of the household in her hands. I think this is the lady I believe the story I was trying to find, and I couldn't confirm it, but I had heard years ago is she would, I mean, okay, 10 children, or you had 8, 17, 19, a busy lady. And so how do you find quiet time for herself? Wasn't she the one, can somebody tell me, who would put her apron up over her head and tell the children when that happens, and that was how she had her quiet time? Does anyone know? Mr. Chris, have you ever heard that story? I think she was the one, but in any event, this was what was impressive. She made a rule for herself that she would once a week spend 1 hour with every child. Once a week, 10 children, spend an hour with every child. So her goal, like Hannah's, was to raise them up to be workers in the church. Hopefully that has been an encouragement to you. Since obviously I don't know what it's like to be a mother, just a dad. Men tend to kind of look at this and say, "Man, no pain, no gain." My question would be, as we look at raising our children or influencing your grandchildren, can we look at it with the end in mind? Does that make sense? And sometimes doing what is best for our children doesn't feel the greatest for ourselves. As a mother, I would just really encourage you to think of it as with the end in mind. It's hard work. It is. But you know what? It is a huge part of God's kingdom. When you think about it, the children that we're raising, my vision for Crosspoint would be that for the next 30 years, all our children would be here in this congregation. That the old people are, let's say people like me, my age group, are going to be the old people. It's not lots of leaving. I mean, that would be my goal, or if the leaving is, it's because we're starting outreaches. And you know what? A lot of that starts just by the influence that you as a mother are giving your child at a very young age. And right, by the way, dads, You're not off the hook. There's Father's Day coming yet. But do you understand just the tremendous amount of input that you have in your child's life? God's plan is flawless. I want to ask you this. Is there any other greater accomplishment or reward for a mother's life calling than to see her children hard at work in the Lord's work? Is there anything more rewarding than that? It's for me as a father. It's this way. I'm 42 years old, and it doesn't look like I'll have amassed a large fortune to pass on to my children. So I've made the comment, and you can hold me accountable. If I can send out five little missionaries, grown missionaries, that's my goal. A mother's work is at the very core of God's plan for staffing His army. And I would just say this, I thought about this, as Anabaptists, we've not always been the best at recruiting from the outside to staff our local army. So we need to do a very good job in training and teaching and staffing it from the inside. I thought it was important enough, this was not my idea, but we are going to do something a little special for the mothers. Taylor and Tiff, would you go raid the fridge back there, please? I should have said something earlier. And what we're going to do, we have a little bit something just as a token of our appreciation, my appreciation for the mothers that are here today. If you have a mother here, you need to come up and get something and take them back to your mother, if you would like to. It can be big kids, little kids, anywhere in between. Just bring them up here. I thought about doing it afterward, but the problem is I wasn't sure if we would get everyone. So, do you have a mom here? One of you want to come up and get this? Okay. Send your children. I'm going to take that back and give it to your mom. Yeah, just keep coming. Did we miss anyone? Trust me, if I were in your shoes, I wouldn't be shy about these. All right. You know, just to recap, when I look at what Leanne does for our children, the more I looked into it, it's just, regardless how inglorious it seems sometimes, it's just a tremendous work. How many of you dads feel that way? Yeah. All right, let's bow our heads for a word of prayer. Dear God, thank you again for this day. Lord, I pray that as we bless the mothers here today and just their part of the body of Christ, and as they give and share, and Lord, just the importance of the young children that we have here and are so blessed with. And then also as we influence and guide and shape the lives of our teenagers and young people, Lord, bless the mothers that put so much time and effort into that. And I just ask your special grace and courage, and just give them a good week, this coming week, and whatever they do. And help us as fathers and just other members in the church to encourage and lift them up to you in a special way. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.